Hello and welcome to the Life in Japan podcast by Gogo Nihon. My name is Sam and I will be your host. In this podcast, we talk about life in Japan as foreign residents, sharing our experiences about learning Japanese, traveling, working, visas, culture, and everything else we encounter in our day-to-day lives. Today's guest is Jose. He's a tour guide for StudyTrip.com, which is a sister company of Gogo Nihon. So we are basically co-workers. Jose is fluent in Japanese, and he visited a Japanese vocational school, or Senmon Gakko, here in Tokyo. So we are going to have a little chat about his experiences there. Jose, thank you so much for joining us today. Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me, Sam. So hello, everyone. My name is Jose. I am from Panama, and I've been in Japan for around 7 years. It's been a crazy journey, and I've been super happy to work with Gogo Nihon and experience all of these wonderful things I'm going to be sharing with you guys today.
7 years?
7 years.
I didn't know that.
Really?
When did you come here?
2014?
Oh my gosh.
It's been a while.
Okay, wow.
That's all it was. Yeah, it's been a while.
How did you even become interested in Japan in the first place?
Oh my god, so I think like most of people, the entry point was definitely like anime and stuff like that. And I had a small objective of wanting to learn Japanese as a side thing. So I attended classes on the National College back home. And my teacher was actually a person from Osaka. So she taught us a lot about Japanese culture besides the language. And I just became really interested to visit one day. And I just happened to have a classmate at the time that was planning to come to study. And I kind of like hop on that and came with him.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, actually, like we researched everything. We did all the paperwork together. We were roommates for like 6 months. It was a whole thing.
Oh, wait. So you came for the first time to Japan and you stayed for 6 months?
No. So he stayed for 6 months and then I stayed all this time here. So.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. So wait, you came as a tourist first, right? Before moving here?
No. I was a student. Fully a student when I came.
From the very beginning?
From the very beginning. Yes.
So you basically decided to move to Japan straight away, and the original plan was 6 months?
1 year.
1 year.
1 year and 3 months, if I remember correctly, was what we originally processed with the school. So what we applied for, but then I was like, I kind of want to do the extra 9 months and be 2 years.
Oh.
And I was working a part-time job at the time, so with that and my parents' help, we kind of managed to raise the money to do that. And then I actually won a scholarship with the school.
Oh.
That actually kind of helped a little bit. But me being me wanted to study in a Senmon Gakko, I needed to stay 3 more months because my term ended in January. So I had to change. I think it was like a weird paperwork I had to do that was really difficult. I lost my scholarship and everything.
Why?
Because like I had to change types of visas and I had to like a whole paperwork to immigration. And I ended up staying those 3 months and then I had to reapply for a student visa with my Senmon Gakko when I applied for my Senmon Gakko.
Okay, so you actually, just to clarify, you were in language school. Originally, yes. 1 year, 3 months, but then you decided to actually do 1 year. Wait, 2 years.
2 years.
2 whole years.
Yes.
And the reason was basically you had to end in April or in March in order to transfer into Senmon Gakko or to Senmon Gakko in April, right?
Yeah, because of how the school year like is in Japan, it begins in April. So yeah, everything in Japan pretty much begins in April.
Right.
Yeah.
Cherry blossom season, new beginnings.
Oh, it's the best.
It's the best.
It's so pretty.
Anyway, so at what point did you actually decide that you wanted to transfer into Senmon Gakko after language school?
So it was a whole deal with either are we going to have the resources to do that, as in are we going to have the money to do that, and am I going to be able to be up for the challenge, because most Senmon Gakkos usually are in Japanese. And whilst I barely scraped by for my N2, I was not super sure I was going to be able to understand everything to perfection.
So at the end of your 2 years, you were barely N2, is that what
you're
saying?
Yes. I had the N2, but I literally passed, like, I think you needed 90 points to pass, and I literally got 90 points.
Whoa!
Yes, and I, like, guessed a couple of questions as well.
That's
so
really lucky.
It was super lucky, so I felt like I was barely N2 level. But I went to a school fair because my language school, I went to Akamonkai actually to study Japanese. And they sometimes offer either career or like higher education fairs, school fairs. So I went to one of those and I saw two schools that I really got curious about because both actually had studies I wanted to like pursue. And I talked with my parents. I kind of, you know, became hype about the whole thing and decided, you know what? I'm going to go to the open campus. I did an open campus class. And I was like, yes, I am going to go to this school.
I'm gonna have to work my back off, and I'm just gonna have to raise enough money to do it, and luckily we managed to do it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So basically it was almost spontaneous, because you came to Japan wanting to learn Japanese, and then the plan was to go back?
Yes.
And now it's been how many years?
7. This whole 7 years have been pretty spontaneous as it is, but I guess that's how the best things happen in life. So.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you went to the fair. There were 2 schools you were interested in.
Yeah.
And what kind of courses were you interested in?
So I originally studied digital animation back home. That's my university degree. And then I did not feel like I was going to be qualified enough to study that in Japan with my skill set. So I pursued creative writing.
Creative writing.
In Japanese.
So you didn't feel up for the task of continuing what you already knew.
Nope.
You were like, I want to be a writer in a language.
Which, by the way, an animator will have way many more lingual and professional vocab in English. But no, I chose the one that you have to be like super fluent in Japanese, because I do that to myself, apparently.
Wow, okay.
So the thing is, at that point in my life, I kind of knew I wanted to become a writer at some point. And I decided, you know what, I'm already here. It's been 2 years. What the heck, I might as well. So I decided to take this course of 2 years in creative writing in a vocational school called Tohogakuen Eiga Semongako. So it was the
Eiga.
Yeah, so like they had different campuses. My studies were in the movie campuses.
Okay.
And the studies within it were the subjects were for the creative writing course for 2 years. Yeah.
Okay. So you did a whole 2 years of creative writing in a language you just learned.
Yes.
Wow. That must have been really difficult.
I'm not gonna lie. It was very challenging in a different way to a Japanese language school, because, you know, in Japanese language school, when you don't understand something, it's just as easy as saying, no, I don't get this. But when you go to a semongaku, I think none of us like realize until we're there, like, you can raise your hand and ask your teacher, I don't know what this word means, because they expect everyone to understand what he's talking about, or what they are talking about, right? And then in class, it's very rude in any Japanese like educational institution to use your phone, so I could not like have special treatment with getting my phone out and researching kanjis. If anything, I had to like always take notes of words I didn't get. Sometimes some of my classmates will help. But it was very, very challenging, but it became easier the more it went, so it was like almost having an express Japanese crash course that I either pass it or I crash against the wall, one of the two. I luckily passed it.
That's incredible.
It was so hard.
So wait, you said you already knew some Japanese back in Panama. You took some classes. What level abouts were you when you actually came to Japan?
I'd say I was probably N5.
N5, okay.
Very top, I was probably N5. I studied for 2 years, but it was like twice a week kind of thing. So it wasn't like, and unlike in Japan, like, I didn't get to use it every day, right?
So, right. Yeah. So just to clarify, N5 is like asking directions, introducing yourself, and maybe hiragana, katakana, maybe 100 kanji.
Maybe. If you like kanjis, which, yes, maybe.
Maybe 100.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So, and then you transferred into language school where you worked for 2 years. Do you think you could have achieved the level necessary without language school to transfer to semongaku?
Definitely, yes, but it would have taken me more time, because the thing is, I feel when you're learning a language, it's a matter of surrounding yourself with that language, right?
Yeah.
And just for happenstance, I happen to land in an international company, so I regularly either use Spanish or English, and I don't really use my Japanese that much. So I imagine just by living in Japan, my Japanese would have definitely improved, but maybe like in twice the amount of time it did when I went to Semongaku. But by surrounding myself with Japanese people, Japanese subjects, Japanese literature, because you had to read a lot of books being in that semongaku.
That makes sense, yeah.
Like, you know, that literally made my Japanese just rise to the occasion, I guess, super fast.
Did you have to do any entrance exams to get into your vocational schools?
I actually didn't. I was recommended by my school.
No
I did. I actually, so I literally die studying for, I think I was in the Chujokyu, which is the intermediate advanced level for the Japanese language school. And they literally told us, if anyone does well in these exams, we'll consider giving like recommendations for your higher education. And at the point, I already decided that I wanted to go to Semongaku.
Yeah.
So I just literally bust my bag, passed that whole test with flying colors, and my teacher was like, okay, here's your letter of recommendation.
Ooh.
And yes, it was.
Oh, that's super nice.
No, it wasn't. There were so many nights that I didn't sleep studying for that.
Thank God, you did it.
Yes,
thank God. You worked hard and you made it.
Yeah, and they have a really good library that it's open 24 hours, so I have a really hard time studying at home because there's so many distractions.
Their library is open 24 hours?
24 hours. Ooh. You get a library card and you just beep, and then you just go in.
Oh, that's actually
easily.
Fun.
No, yeah, and then like...
My language school didn't have that.
Which one was your language school?
ISI.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no 24-hour beep library.
No. It was really good. I mean, it kind of made you... you know, have to go past, like, you need to study all night for some, well, not all night, but, you know, you go way later than night studying, and I spent a lot of nights, like, I study before going to my part-time job, went to my part-time job, then go and study, so I was barely having any sleep at this point.
Oh my gosh.
And then I somehow managed to pass this test, and I think I probably crashed the whole weekend after the test.
What was your part-time job?
I did two part-time jobs, was it two? It was two part-time jobs on my whole time I was studying in Akamonkai, and they were both being waiter.
Yeah. Being a waiter?
Yeah, I was a waiter in a Korean barbecue place, and then on an Italian restaurant, because consistency. Yeah.
Okay, did you have fun doing that?
It was pretty fun. It was pretty good. It helped a lot of the business kegel in that sense,
yeah,
of how to address customers.
Right.
You learn a lot through that, actually, because I actually was a waiter. Like, I was not on the bag doing, like, dishes or anything. I was actually doing face-to-face with the clients. But it was super fun. And it was also, like, it kind of helped out when you had a foreigner come into the restaurant and you had to help them in English, and that also kind of like
time to shine.
Yeah, my time to shine. And then it's like I talk to someone that either speaks my language or speaks English, so that also takes the edge of a little bit of things. So
I guess really there's good. A lot of people who come here who are actually native Spanish speakers, right?
There is. There was quite a bit of people both in my Semongaku actually and on my Japanese language schools that were from either Spain or Latin America.
Okay.
Not in my class.
Not in your class.
Not in my class.
Well, that's good though, because it's easy to fall into the habit of making friends with your classmates to speak
true.
The same language,
yeah.
And then you never get to actually practice Japanese. I was lucky because I didn't have any classmates who actually spoke English until my last 3 months. So in the beginning, my best friends were Korean.
Oh, there
and
you go.
Our only common language was Japanese. So we were only able to speak Japanese to each other, which of course, very, very bad Japanese in the beginning.
But it kind of helped out. Like, you kind of like raise each other a little bit through that, though.
Exactly,
so that's
exactly.
Nice.
And you have the exact same vocabulary, so you know exactly which topics you can talk about and which topics you can't talk
exactly.
about.
Exactly. Oh, and I guess you also get a little bit of language exchange through it as well.
Yeah. And it's fun to actually talk to people from such different cultures that aren't necessarily influenced by English, because I feel like when you speak the English language, you're very... almost Americanized in a lot of senses, because you understand Hollywood movies
and you watch
TV shows from the US or from
all
the UK,
the references,
Australia.
All memes, everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you share a lot of common ground already because of the language. So if you don't have that and your only common language is Japanese, it's a very different experience, in my opinion.
I totally agree with that.
Where exactly was your vocational school campus?
So it's all in the area of Nishi Shinjuku Gochome area. So it's like on the outskirts of Shinjuku. So it's kind of like the suburb part of that place. So it's not as bustling. It's not that much of a business district. And it was literally right next to the station.
Was it a big school, like a big campus, like a standalone building, or was it a floor in a bigger building?
It was a standalone building. So there were many different buildings around the area, a little bit spread. And then I think my campus had a total of 3 floors. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A total of 3 floors on a rooftop. And usually my class would be like on the second floor. Yeah.
I'm really curious about your first week at Semongaku. It must have been terrifying.
Oh, God. It felt like coming to Japan all over again, you know? Like, literally, like, it was like, oh, my God, this is so cool. I don't think I'm understanding anything it's been told, like, right now. Because, like, you know, they give you, you know, and these things you never think about. Like, you know, they give you the schedule, and then you never think, oh, how do I say first, second, third, fourth period in Japanese, right? And you're like, oh, we have to, like, on the first jigen, it's always HR. And I'm like, what? What are these people talking about? And, like, you know, I kind of, like, started, like, going through it, and... Actually, one really nice thing about my head teacher at the time, because it changed on the second year, my head teacher at the time was only me and another foreign person in the classrooms. It was this Chinese girl. And after the orientation, the very first day, they took us on the side and they're like, if you have any questions, now it's time for you to ask, because, you know, after today, things are going to be very hectic, classes are going to start.
And then I managed to like ask a couple of things that I didn't get through the orientation, but luckily everything was explained to me super clearly. And then the first couple of classes weren't so bad because it was mostly introductory.
Mm-hmm.
And again, most of the teachers were like, oh, you can stay a little bit after class,
aww,
ask any questions about it. But then the second week was the week in which all the gloves came off. They're like, okay, so you had your week to ask anything, to settle. Now you're going to like do everything else just as everyone else.
Oh my gosh.
So it was like, it was very fast paced in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's creative writing, right? You have a lot of like hands on time. So you have to like sit down and you get time to write and stuff. So it's not much about theory because most of the theory,
yeah,
you bring home with you.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that bad in that sense, but then having to read the instructions, for example, having to like read what I need to do, or when they explain like, oh, so we're going to explain like this type of like, what does prose mean? How do you use this type of things,
mm-hmm,
in like a line delivery or in a plot? And I'm like,
oh my God,
I think I understand everything you're saying, but I don't understand the Japanese part.
Oh no.
Yeah, but little by little I managed, so
uh-huh,
Google Translate and Denshi Jisho work wonders with that.
Ah yeah, the Denshi Jisho, the electronic dictionary.
So no, the website actually.
You used the website.
I used the website is literally called Denshi Jisho, just the dictionary.
So you didn't have the actual little flip thing that people have on their desks.
No, the Chinese girl in my class actually did,
mm-hmm,
and then she had almost no problem whatsoever. I'm like, no, I'm not gonna rely on that. I can do this, and I wish I had that.
It's really common even for Japanese people to have it though, right?
It is, yeah, actually. A lot of my teachers actually used it.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was super surprised about that because kanji is so complex in general. I'm talking about people that study writing.
Right.
And even they had to like, you know, sometimes check like, oh, how do you write this again? And so I think it's really common because like nowadays we don't really, well, we mostly like Japanese people don't really like handwrite for the most part. And so everything is text, right? Everything is digital. So you don't really practice writing that much. So sometimes when my teachers actually had to write in a chalkboard or something, they actually had to like look at the canvas. I was like, oh, so it's not only me. Nice. Yeah.
Wait, so when you did creative writing, you were allowed to type on the computer, right?
No, like what? We had some classes. So we had, it was called Chōhen Seisaku, which is basically a long shot novel. So it was like basically what we normally buy in a bookstore, right? So they have normal length of a novel,
mm-hmm,
and the whole trimester, the whole semester, sorry, will be writing a novel from beginning to end.
Wow.
For those, we could lend the computers at the school or like bring our own, like our laptops and stuff. That was probably one of the few times that we could actually write on a computer.
Oh my
god. For most of the part, we're given like the special papers that you can like, they're segmented in blocks for like the kanas and the kanjis that you had to write on, and then you had to turn your assignments on that, and they had like a free like take them away for home if you need them, take as many as you can. There were people that legitimately wrote novels in my face and on hand, like on paper, and I was like, that is crazy.
It's crazy to me. You were able to handwrite kanji.
Oh no, that was a whole different thing altogether. That, I think that was the only time my teachers were like, "Okay, you can actually use your phone." Like,
okay, great.
Yeah, but if it has like a time limit, like you'd say, "Oh, you have 20 minutes to write like a scene."
Oh.
And they were like, "Okay, you can actually use your phone, but just make sure you deliver, like you turn it in on time."
Yes.
That was the only time. But I think some of my classmates were also doing that as well. Like, they were probably researching like, mm-hmm, the meaning for this kanji will be for, mm-hmm, like a reference for a scene or something. So that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was fine.
Wait, so you actually already wrote a novel?
Oh, yes.
So in one semester, that's, I guess, 6 months, your course. Okay, so you wrote a whole novel in 6 months.
Yes.
What was it about?
Oh my God, it's so bad. It's gonna be cringy for everyone listening to this. But basically, I'm a big fantasy nerd in general, so I wrote a modern take on the whole Ragnarok mythos for Norse mythology.
Mm-hmm.
So I pretty much did a modern adaptation of that because Japanese people really love Norse mythology
they
and like
do.
Greek mythology in general. So I was like, oh, this is gonna be like easier for me to write. But it was so bad. I did not like what I write. That's
you
one of the
didn't?
Things. Yeah, that was one of the things they taught me, and I think it's true. Like, if you don't look back to something you've done previously and you don't see that little bit of cringe in it, then you're probably not advancing enough.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
So like, I feel like that's a good thing, but now I'm like, yeah, actually, for my graduation project, Will had to write one novel under the premise of This is something we'll potentially send to a publishing house.
Wow.
And it's on our yearbook. So the yearbook for my class was literally a compilation book with all of our novels.
Wow. That must have been a huge
book. It is a Bible and a half. I have it on my home. It's like, it's huge.
Oh my goodness.
It's a blog of text.
Did you actually publish?
No, not yet. It's something I'm working on. I'm actually publishing online here and there. I'm doing like some short stories, publishing them on Kakuyomu, which is a website in which everyone can pretty much upload
Kakuyomu.
Things.
Write and read,
basically. Okay. So you can literally just upload and people can give you like feedback and stuff. Like you build a community. It's like Wattpad, but Japanese Wattpad, basically, knows that. There's a bunch of those. Shosetsukaninaro, it's also a website. Shosetsuka means novelist. Yeah. So it's like, oh, let's become novelist.com.
And
then, and then they hold contests every once in a while. So you can like get some recognition here and there. But I'm at the moment just like uploading things here and there just to not lose the habit of writing.
So you're actually still writing?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Even though you're currently a tour guide.
Yes, it is an interesting and weird background in here. Yes.
Okay, so how often or how many hours would you say you write a week currently?
I would say currently it's on a day-to-day basis because I have a lot of things going on in my life at the moment besides that and work.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do end up writing, probably it's like 1 to 3 hours a day.
Wow.
For, let's say, a media of 4 days a week.
Wow,
so
that's
12 hours
really
a week.
Long. Were you always a writer, even like maybe in Spanish when you were a teenager or something?
I think yes. I never realized it. I had like a little diary and stuff that I was always writing things on. So like, yes. So like, I was always writing in it, but it never clicked with me until I think I came to Japan. And because I already did 4 years of animation studies back home, right? And I was like, this is a bit too hard. And then, you know, the industry here is very competitive for that. It is very heavy. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do that. But I'm always interested in creating, like, you know, stuff, creating, like, worlds, creating characters, stories. So that's when it kind of hit me, like, oh, maybe I just like writing.
What is an example of some of the classes that you took?
I took a long shot novel production, so basically creating a novel from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
I took filmmaking, actually.
Filmmaking?
Well, script making.
Script
Within
writing.
Filmmaking or script making. We made also like script making for both movies and plays. We made audio drama script writing. Those are all three different classes, by the way. We did video game development, but our video game development was more focused on, what's the name of the RPG Maker?
Okay.
So it was more like create something that's interesting with limited resources because then you have to focus on the story. So it was basically that. We also did, how do you say, literature, like Japanese literature, world literature. We did prose studies, which is basically different topics each class.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, today we're going to talk about emotional writing. Like, how do you write a scene with emotion? Then we'll talk the next week about, oh, this is the history of how fantasy came to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And
fun.
Then, yeah, it was really, that one was really fun. And that was the class that we got a lot of recommendations from, and that teacher for that class, actually, his name was Kobayashi Sensei.
Mm-hmm.
He was a sensei that gave me the open campus class, in which, funnily enough, we actually did a super small role-playing game campaign.
Oh, cute.
That tabletop one. It was super cool. And then we actually did that one in class as well. We even did a character sheet in class, too. What else?
Whoa, it's a lot nerdier than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, it is writing, so you're going to have to, like, you know, be a little bit of everything. What else?
That's really interesting, though, that you didn't only... Because when I hear creative writing, I really... I guess I never really thought about all the different sides it can take or all the different roles that it can apply to. But yeah, you're completely right. Like, movie scripts plays. What was your favorite?
I think it was between... I don't remember the exact name of the class or how you would say it in English, but it was editorial, which was basically editing or proofreading manuscripts.
Mm-hmm.
So you literally get a manuscript and the teacher will be like, oh, this is how you correct this. Like, how you add, like, mistakes, how you add, like, the punctuations are missing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is about that class that I just... There's something super cathartic in my brain of doing that. And I love that one. That one, and I think the production one we had to write a novel. Because it was basically sit down, write if you have a question or you have a doubt of how to improve or how you're thinking about how to improve something.
Mm.
You will literally just talk to the teacher and there will be days which was my favorite thing, in which one person will have this one doubt and it will turn into a group discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember the most was one person saying, like, how should English be used in Japanese novels? And then they wanted my take on it because, you know, I can speak English. And it was, it turned into a whole group discussion of, oh, we think if we're going to have English in it, it should be, like, you know, actual letters, like, you know, romaji, basically, mm-hmm. so, like, Western letters. People were like, oh, no, it should be in katakana because it's easier to understand for Japanese people, but then you lose a little bit of the appeal to it, like, you lose the sincerity of it, the nature of it. And it was super fun. Like, we had a cool debate about that for, like, an hour. Like, the whole class went by through that, and that was the class of the day. So wow. I think those two were probably my favorite ones.
Oh, really? Yeah. So, editorial. So, did you ever consider working for, like, Shupansha? What's it called? An, publisher?
Publishers. I have, but I kind of want to be more on the creating side.
Yeah.
Although that's a, for what I've gathered, that's a pretty good step into that as well.
True.
So, I haven't really, like, put it off the table at the mm-hmm. moment, but I'm kind of, like, still brushing up on my skill set in that sense, because even if I've been here 7 years, I mm-hmm. still feel I can still be a bit better when it comes to writing.
Yeah, I mean, that's only 7 years of Japanese language ability. And the first 2 years you spend learning, and I guess actually you're still learning Japanese.
No, for sure. For sure. No, every time when I'm watching anything on TV or what I'm reading, I'm constantly, I feel like sometimes I'm annoying people when I do this, but sometimes I'm like, oh, sorry, I need to, like, look this up real quick. I have a friend that absolutely hates, like, when you use phones when we're watching something, but when we're watching something in Japanese, like, can you stop? Like, I really need to check what that kanji means. And just ingrained on my system now.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're constantly learning.
Constantly.
Always on. I feel that, though. It's a great way to learn, especially when you're already past N2 level.
Yeah.
Ever since I've gone past N2 level, whenever I watch something, mm-hmm. it's always Japanese, but with Japanese subtitles.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I also make sure that I look up all the kanji I don't know and stuff like that. Mm. So even though you're relaxing, you're still kind of on all the time.
Yeah. Like, it's not a struggle. It's not like a stress. It's just part of you at that point.
Yeah,
already.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
It is.
You learn something new every day. It's like a challenge, and
yeah.
I almost couldn't imagine what it would be like to not constantly want to learn or learning something new, right?
I know,
so
right?
I think
it's
really great.
Because, like, people like you and me really like Japanese language in general,
yeah.
So, like, I think that's also part of it.
I think we're just nerds.
That too. That too.
So, one question that is really interesting to me, since, of course, you don't have the same language abilities as native speakers, is
mm-hmm.
what were exams like, and how was the grading handled for you? Because, obviously, there will be more grammar mistakes, or kanji mistakes, stuff like that. So, were the teachers kind of, like, easy on you?
It fell on teacher-to-teacher basis, to be honest. I had one teacher that was, like, non-forgiven.
Oh.
I think that's the guy that gave me the hardest time in the whole 2 years I was in that school. His critiques were always, you need to do better in Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wouldn't really critique my work, he would critique my Japanese.
Yeah.
And other teachers will critique both. Some will critique the story side only because they'll be like, oh, you'll get better at it. You're already getting better at it, so it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one teacher, my homeroom teacher on the first year, actually, when we were doing the editorial class, I kind of did do a mistake because he said, how will you reinterpret this kanji, which
mm-hmm.
is to look around. So I did, like, mi mawaru. So it's, like, the mawaru was the one that's two squares. I don't know if you can think of it.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's not exactly how you write that, but can you, like, tell me what was your thought process with that?
Okay.
And I was like, oh, you know, because you're looking and, like, you're moving around. And I was like, oh, well, I mean, I wouldn't consider that grammatically correct, but I like the way you thought about that, so I'm actually just going to give you the point.
Yeah.
So I think he appreciated the fact that I was not thinking, oh, okay, Spanish or English, Japanese. Like, I actually thought I thought of the action and I put it on paper in Japanese.
Yeah.
And even though it was wrong, he was kind of like, okay, like, you know what? I'll give you the point. I just need you to explain it to me. But he did that only with me and the Chinese girl because of the fact that we were not native English, Japanese speakers.
Right.
But for the most part, I think it was 50-50. Because again, like the production class, that one, usually everyone had mistakes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone always had, like, red marks and stuff. So that one was pretty much, once focus on your story, I'll help you fix the Japanese
mm-hmm.
type of thing. So
no, that's really nice of them.
Yeah.
So
cool.
What kind of exams did you have? Did you actually have? So you said for one class, the exam was to write a whole novel in 6 months.
Yeah. Well, the project more than the
project.
Exam,
yeah.
I had exams. It was funny. Like, I don't know if it's the same in many other places, but this will never happen in Panama, let alone in Latin America, but I think mostly in Panama. We had on the prose studies class, I think, or depiction studies class. We had always a different topic, like I told you, right? But that will include a lot of like history and facts.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, on this day, this author X, Y, and Z. We talk about Kafka. We talk about a lot of things.
Wow.
We talk about George Orwell, all of that. So they had a lot of dates and books and names and references that we needed to learn.
Mm-hmm.
But even though we did got a test with like, you know, multiple answers and stuff, they did allow us our notes. Like we could check notes in the test, and that was for everyone. That was not only for me and this girl.
Yeah.
So those tests, like actual like paper tests, we did have, but we could check our notes. So it was mostly about, are you paying attention in class?
Right.
Because, you know, nowadays you can pretty much reference knowledge all the time with your phone and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest example of that. The editorial class as well was something along the lines of, this is how you do it. Now you're going to do it without the teacher type of thing. And
mm-hmm.
that's the one that I told you that my teacher was like, oh, okay, I'll give you the point because it's actually like a pretty inventive way of thinking of this. But everything else was pretty much projects.
I see. Okay. Makes sense. Yeah. Creative writing.
Exactly.
So you mentioned that they make sure that you pay attention in class. So attendance in class is basically 100%. You need to be in class.
As much as Japanese language school, if not a bit more strict, because it's like an actual, like, you know, you're learning a subject that is not only language.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're learning so many different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then each different teacher, each different class. So there were teachers that were like, oh, if you were out more than three times, like,
mm-hmm.
bother coming back. There were teachers like, as long as you have a good reasoning for this, it's fine. So, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's the same for many Senmongakko. I'm not sure about university in Japan, but...
Yeah, university might be a little bit different because university, but I'm
mm-hmm.
pretty sure Senmongakko is similar for what I've
heard.
Because I had some friends in other campuses and other studies, and they were saying pretty much the same thing, so...
Yeah, when I was in university in Europe, attendance was kind of not taken, but in Japan you have to be really careful because you do lose your student visa if
of
you
course.
Don't have... at least 80 or even 90%
mm-hmm.
attendance.
It's like that at least. It was with my Senmongakko and with my language school, it was like that pretty much.
Yeah, and that actually, a lot of people have trouble with that because they don't know about this and then
exactly.
they want a new visa in the future and they cannot get it ever
exactly.
again.
So make sure you attend your classes.
So you were in this vocational school for 2 years.
Yes.
And then you graduated. Was there, for example... If you do badly in classes, how is that handled in Senmongakko?
That is a really good question because I still don't figure it out myself that much because I was never graded in the sense of 1 to 100 or A, B, C, D, F or whatever. I was usually told if you finish, you'll get a passing grade as long as you finish within the standards. Yeah, and exams, some of them I did get graded and some of them were like actual notes, like 1 to 100, and those one I somehow managed to pass. I don't know how. But for the most part, as long as you turn in your projects in time and with the conditions they get for you, then it's 100% not a problem. Like,
okay,
yeah.
Interesting. It's probably the nature of your degree. Basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly what they did look at more was how much you went over it. So like if your projects were under the conditions they threw in and on top of that you did extra, then... I think for what I remember for the school fairs and stuff, they will ask certain students for certain things, for extra work and things that could potentially, you know, connect them with people in the business. But it's like for the students that excelled in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Did you get along well with your classmates? Did you make like lasting friendships when you were at Senmongakko?
I'd say so. I did get along. I mean, there was definitely an age gap because there's a lot of people that finished high school and went straight to Senmongakko. Yeah, so like under 20, and then I remember one day when I came back from holidays, they were like, oh, we're gonna do the you know, the Seiji no Hi thing, which they book, and I'm like, oh, that's cute.
So that's when Japanese people turn 20.
Exactly.
They dress up in pretty kimono.
Yeah, or like in suits nowadays, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently they do suits as well nowadays, and like they go out and walk, like, we're adults now! And I was like, oh, I've been there for like 6 years.
So you were 26?
I was like 26 at the time, I think. 26, 27, yeah.
So there's about a 6-7 year age gap between you when you first started.
And most of the people in class. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was like a couple of people that were like either 25. There was one, I think there was only one person that was older than I am for 1 year. But that was like the only person that legitimately was like not that big of an age gap. And we like got along pretty well because, you know, we had a similar age range.
Mm-hmm.
We could legally go out and drink and stuff, so, you know. Now, I think the first year was a little bit hard because of the age gap, the cultural gap. I think I and the classmates were, like, pretty awkward about, like, you know, getting
closer to each other because of that.
Because of the age gap or because you're a foreigner?
I think both, to be honest. Yeah. Because like it's like, am I coming across correctly? Am I not being rude? And then they might be thinking the same thing. And at the end of the day, like, you know, you're starting with these people every day for Monday through Friday. Like, there's going to be points in which you talk to them. You have to talk to them. And that leads you to interest. And like you said, it's a pretty nerdy, it's a pretty geeky, like, study. So sometimes they will be like, oh, I kind of want to do, when we had to do a group scene, it's like, oh, I kind of want to do this. Let's say, like, Shin Megami Tensei, for example. It's a Japanese long RPG series. And I was like, oh, I play that. And then, you know, we kind of like bonded over that. And that helps you like ease into it a little bit.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah, so it was pretty nice in that sense.
So you mentioned that you're still writing nowadays in your free time and you're trying to publish one day. But how else are you currently using your Japanese in your everyday life?
I think a lot of the things I learn, ironically, through some of the classes, as in the Japanese myth and legends and lore and stuff like that, as a tour guide, it's always interesting when we visit a temple, for the most part. So that's like a way I never thought I would like actually use that knowledge.
True.
But there's times in which we're in either an Inari temple or a specific temple where we see like a statue of a deity. And they're like, oh, what is that? And for the most part, you're like, I have no idea. Or you like read it. I was like, oh, that's this and that. Do you know that there's a legend on Japanese media about this? And they was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I'm like, thank you, Kobayashi-sensei.
That's actually really interesting.
Yeah, so it's like one of the few ways in which I think it impacts my work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you never know. So.
And of course, being a tour guide, you have to speak Japanese to all the shop clerks and the local people anyway. So in that sense, it's really
helpful.
So
that also helps for a lot.
And of course, living in Japan, you need Japanese.
Yeah, of course.
So since you're the expert on creative writing, there's like one thing that I've been wondering recently, because I have been reading a manga recently, and it's in Japanese, of course, and I have noticed that a lot of the time, the kanji will be, it could be Japanese, and but it's like a completely different word than the furigana next to it.
Yeah.
So, for example, in a lot of the time, it would be, for example, Aitsu, like that person, and then in kanji would be the name of the person.
Yeah.
So it's like, I wonder why it's necessary to put the two different Japanese words right next to each other. Like, which one are they actually saying?
I see. That's actually, this is something that I actually learned in class. When you have the, that's what you call the okurigana, what's on top of the kanji, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you read it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what they're saying. That's what their mouth is saying.
Right.
But what they mean is the kanji. So it's like a way of emphasizing what they mean with what they're saying. So sometimes it will be, this could be a really bad example, so I apologize, but it will be like, they don't want to say out loud, like, you know, I'm going to kill you. So they don't want to say korosu.
Mm-hmm.
So they will say yaru.
Yeah.
But if you say yaru, that could be interpreted to a lot of different things.
Yes.
So while they want to be like, oh, we're not saying we're going to kill you, but the kanji is here, so, you know, he means that type of thing. It's one of the nuances of Japanese that I really like in that sense. It's like kind of what you're saying versus what you're thinking.
Okay, interesting.
If that helps out, yeah.
I noticed even the subtitles on Netflix sometimes do that.
Yep.
It's driving me a bit crazy.
Yeah,
no, It's like, what if I was watching this without subtitles and then I would lose that extra nuance?
Exactly, which is a cool thing about Japanese because it has so many layers. Like, speaking is one part of it, but if you actually, like, forego the writing of it, you forego kanjis, which is some people, I get why some people want to do, you lose a big part of the language that I think it's almost a shame that you do.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
No, for real.
Yeah.
What kind of books do you read in your free time from other people in Japanese?
I read a little bit of everything at this point. So I literally, if I see a, that's one thing that I really find interesting that I was taught. Usually, with like with any book, you're either catched by the author, the title, or the cover art.
Right.
One of the three.
And cover art is big in Japan.
Exactly, right? But oddly enough, the title is what usually gets me. So if it's not a novel based on an anime I already watched or known, or an artist, author, you know, is usually the title that gets to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember recently I read a book called Tatta Ippatsu Datta Hasu Nanoni. So it was like, it was supposed to only be one drink.
Yeah.
Which is a story about this guy that got drunk one night where he was supposed to just drink one beer with his coworker.
Uh-huh.
He wakes up on jail the following day, blank, accused of murder.
Oh no.
And I was like, just based on that and the little like summary in the back, I was like, I'm gonna read that book because I love mystery novels in general.
That sounds great, actually.
Yeah, so that's how I usually like read books. I had a coworker a couple of years ago recommending me a book she read called Friends. It was really called Frendo in Japanese.
Okay.
And it was a really good one. I really enjoyed it. I would have probably never buy that book if I saw it on the shelf. But
it's just like, as friends.
Yeah, but it's like, it's really good. So
what is it about?
It's about a cool human being. And that's as much as I can explain because it's a weird book.
Oh, God.
But it's about this one person that appears in 3 or 4 different stories.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a really cool human being.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's pretty much about that.
Well,
so he's a friend of...
gives nothing away, but that's good.
Yes.
That's your osusume for today?
Those are my two osusume for today,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Definitely.
And maybe at some point we will have a book published by Mr. Jose right here. Would you go by like an artist name or would you just publish
it? Because this is something my teachers were always on, like, fighting on. They were like, oh, he should probably have like a more, like, you know, Japanese
name.
Like, sorry, maybe if it's weird. And they were like, but... seeing a book published by a foreigner can sell a lot as well. Like, that's a very interesting thing. So they always were on the fence of that. So I'm here in the middle being like, I guess I'll decide when I have a book good enough to publish.
Okay. On that note, thank you very much for joining us today. That was super interesting.
Thank you for having me. I had a lot of fun.
And I hope that one day we will have a book from, who knows what name you will go by,
hopefully,
on the shelf somewhere Japanese bookshop.
I'll make sure to notify you all about it.
So thank you everybody for listening today. If you have any questions or feedback regarding what we talked about today, please send an email to podcast@gogonihon.com, or if you're interested in learning Japanese in Japan, visit our website gogonihon.com. We hope you tune in again for our next episode. Matane!